This is an ABC podcast.
This is The Conversation Hour
on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
If you've ever had your car break down, you know how stressful and how expensive it can be to fix. But what if the car that breaks down, you only purchased a week or a month ago? There are thousands of complaints about defective second-hand vehicles all across Australia each year. And the Consumer Action Law Centre wants a motor vehicle ombudsman to help buyers affordably resolve disputes. Someone who's been looking into this and your co-host today, ABC Features reporter Matilda Morozzi. Matilda, the idea of rising number of defective cars is not really helping the stereotype of dodgy used car salesmen in this scenario. But is buying a lemon car, a dodgy car, a growing concern?
I think it is, Rochelle. Like, for a long time, it's been one of the most complained about consumer goods. The Australian Competition and Consumer Commission has said that at a state and territory level, complaints about motor vehicles were the most common. But I think with the rising cost of living and since COVID, the rising cost of used cars, if you have invested a lot of money or taken out a loan to buy a secondhand vehicle and it breaks down almost immediately and you can't find a good resolution with your dealer, it can be catastrophic for people financially and to their personal lives, particularly in regional and rural Victoria or in the outer suburbs where you need a car.
Absolutely.
To get around.
And we were seeing over the last couple of years the price of secondhand cars in some instances being worth more than what they were purchased for in the first place, because we had so many issues with supply when it came to new cars getting into the country. So the sale of secondhand cars has gone absolutely through the roof. But those that are connected to the industry, how many people are thinking that an ombudsman is the way to go? Because when you think about the role of an ombudsman, they come in right at the end, right when it's all gone completely pear-shaped and you're stuck and you think, when you say, I need to call the ombudsman, things haven't gone well. So that's at the end. Is that something that people want? Is this the right resolution?
Obviously, it'd be great if there was no problems with secondhand vehicles, but I think what's happening at the moment, the current system, to get a resolution when you are at that sticky end where there are problems, it takes a lot of time and it can cost a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And that's something that if you need a car to get to your job, to get your kids to school, to get the shopping, you can't afford that time. And if you've taken out a loan to buy a secondhand car, I'm betting you probably don't have the money to invest in those solutions through things like the Victorian Civil and Administrative Tribunal. So the ombudsman, the idea of that, consumer groups are pushing for that because they're saying, well, this could be free for consumers and have someone to investigate it without them putting in a lot of time and without them needing lawyers and potentially mechanics as experts. But a lot of people who are in the automotive industry, they don't think it's a good idea. They just think it's another level of bureaucracy and that we don't need it. We should just improve the systems we have at the moment.
We'll get into the finer details with the Consumer Action Law Centre in just a moment. But who's going to pay for it? How does it work?
So the idea of the ombudsman that consumer groups are pitching is that all car dealers would pay a nominal fee to run the ombudsman, but then every time you have a complaint against your dealer, you'd pay a case fee, and then the longer that case runs, the more expensive it would be for you as the car dealer. So it'd be funded by car dealers, and the idea is that it would incentivize them to either not get complaints or to not have those complaints last a long time. And the current system doesn't do that.
That's the bit that I find interesting. I actually wonder whether the deterrent of the ombudsman and the fee associated, especially if that's building up, is the part of it that would work. So if you've bought a secondhand car and it turns out to be a lemon, where do you stand? And maybe of late you've been caught out. Is this something you'd like to see? Would you like to see a motor vehicle ombudsman?
This is The Conversation Hour.
With Rochelle Hunt and Matilda Morozzi talking about if you've bought a car that turns out to be a lemon. I keep thinking of the scene from National Lampoon's Vacation where Chevy Chase goes in to buy a car that turns out to be from Eugene Levy that's an absolute lemon. And that stereotype of used car salesman is the image that we have. And I guess what the Consumer Action Law Centre is trying to stop, Matilda, so that we don't have people taking advantage not only of selling you something that's not up to scratch, but at the same same time, they're quite often the ones that are giving you the loan. They have, so I'm wondering if it's the car they want to sell you or if it's the loan and if it's the high interest that they're wanting to sell you.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously there's a lot of people doing the right thing, but if you have one person doing the wrong thing, for those, if you're on the end of that, it doesn't matter that, you know, maybe 1,000 other dealers are doing the right thing if you've got someone who's sold you a car that isn't up to scratch. And I think someone who knows all about that is Michelle Moon. Michelle, I actually came out to your place earlier in the year, and in your backyard there was your son's ute, and the engine was actually taken apart in pieces in the front seat. Can you tell us what happened there with that vehicle that you purchased for your son?
Hi, Matilda. Yep, you did come out and you did see the car. So my son, Nick, he bought a car. It was $22,000 plus from Automax in February 2020. 3 days later, it broke down. Apparently the turbo had burnt out. We took it back to the Automax. They supposedly fixed it. In saying that, they would never give us any paperwork. Come 3 months later, the turbo burnt out again, and this time the engine seized up. We took it back to the car yard. Their communication skills weren't great. We had to call them daily. We had to go into them to see them.
I think that second time, Michelle, it was a catastrophic failure of the engine, and there were the repairs for that were quoted at something like $10,000, and you paid $20,000 for the car. Is that right, Michelle?
Yep, that's correct. So they said they would repair it for another $10,000. So apparently it was a faulty oil pump. So the mechanic there said to us, if that had been fixed on the first breakdown, the engine wouldn't have seized up on, it wouldn't have happened the second time.
So that must be stressful, Michelle. You're sort of now $30,000 when you put both the cost of the car and the cost of the repairs together. What was the, where did you stand there? Where did you and your son, what were you able to do? Was it something that were, your only choice was to then take it to VCAT?
No, so then we took it to Consumer Affairs. They weren't helpful at all. The case person, he basically gave me incorrect information because I went back and said that this was a major failure. You know, this car wasn't fit to be sold. He said because there was no stat warranty on the car because it just done over 160,000 and including it was a ute and that didn't cover under that law, which was incorrect. So he basically said he can't help us. Automax had offered us a 2K goodwill towards the 10,000. So Consumer Affairs just basically said in their email to me, take it, or if you're not happy with that, go to VCAT.
And is that something that is easily done for you and your son to be able to take it to VCAT? Because it feels like, you know, we're told that so often, well, you can take it up with VCAT. Is that something that is feasible for you?
It wasn't easy because during that time we were going through COVID, so there was a lot of, you know, cases at VCAT to start off with, plus the time. You know, we submitted the application into VCAT in December. They never responded back until February in 2021, and that was only because I called them because we hadn't had any correspondence from them.
And Michelle, did you need to hire lawyers or get mechanical experts to testify? Was it an expensive process for your family as well?
Yeah, so after the Consumer Affairs, we hired a solicitor. They were really good, supportive. They sent numerous emails to the Automax. You did not respond a lot.
Now, Michelle, ultimately, it did get to VCAT. I think it took a couple of years, and the Victorian Civil and Administrative Tribunal dismissed the application because they couldn't determine if the engine failure was because of the condition the ute was bought in or how it was used when your son Nicholas had it. Can you take us through the toll that this battle has taken on your family, both financially and emotionally?
So financially, like Nick, he's just, you know, a young adult. He's just, you know, was on an apprentice wage, so he took a loan out for this car. So it's going to take him years to just recover from this, let alone he has to get another car to drive around in. The emotional stress, you know, because he was working on the other side of the city, so just trying to get a lift out, you know, to keep his job or whatever, you know, that wasn't easy because he didn't have anyone from his work that worked near him, you know, so he was borrowing cars and...
Yeah, gosh. Yeah. It must be so stressful. Michelle, thanks so much for highlighting the, you know, the situation for both you and your son, and there's lots of texts coming in saying that people are in similar situations. Thanks for your time, Michelle.
That's
Take
okay.
care.
Thank
See
you.
Ya. Bye. That's Michelle Moon there, talking about her son. And Matilda, of course, we did actually ask CMG, who is the overall body looking after Automax, to be a part of today's show. And we haven't had a response from them. And I know that you reached out to them during your article and your research as well.
Yeah, and they said that they welcomed the findings of VCAT, that it complied with consumer responsibilities, and that unfortunately they say that Nick didn't maintain the vehicle to an acceptable standard, and that's what caused the car to break down. But that was contested in the VCAT hearing, so you can see it's a very long process, yeah. But not really an outcome. It was kind of like, oh, we're not sure who's responsible, so we'll just leave it at that.
There's text here saying, we recently had a very similar experience with a second-hand car purchase. $5,000 worth of repairs needed immediately after we purchased. The warranty covered us. However, it took a great deal of pushing and calls to the dealership. An ombudsman would be very welcome, says Matt. And another, Rochelle and Matilda, buyers of used cars should pay for a mechanics report on the workings of engine, transmission, suspensions before committing to buy. Roadworthy certificates don't cover the inner workings, just safety-related items. Ombudsman is ineffective once the car fails. Sellers are likely to have no reachable assets to provide recovery costs. That's from Jake in Williamstown. He really knows what he's talking about there. But Matilda, we were talking off air, you know, we were saying other than a house or an apartment, a car is the next big purchase. You're probably, they're the two big things you're going to purchase in your life. And we go through a lot of due diligence when it comes to buying a house. Admittedly, they're worth more, but you know, you'll get builder's reports and you'll get people to come through it and whatever it may be. With a car, do we do that same level of due diligence?
I don't think so. I think most people think, oh, it's got a roadworthy, it must be all right. They don't realise that the engine hasn't been inspected and stuff like that. And I think if you're needing to take out a loan to buy a car, you probably don't have the extra cash to spend to get a mechanic to investigate. So, yeah, it's interesting to see that. Obviously, that's good advice, but you need to be able to afford to do it.
Nick's in queue. G'day, Nick.
G'day, how are you?
Good. What did you want to say?
Yeah, just regarding used car dealerships, I mean, any used car dealership worth its salt would earn anywhere between $10,000 and $20,000 a week, just selling four or five cars. Now, instead of, just putting all the money aside, or, you know, having fun times with the money, they should invest money in employing somebody that when they're buying a car, they're doing a full mechanical sort of appraisal on the vehicle, and in order to, you know, sort of protect the consumer. That could be a good start. Mm. But more than that is that, you know, if an ombudsman does come in and keeps putting pressure on these businesses, all they'll do is just declare themselves bankrupt and go and start somewhere else as well. Like most companies that do the wrong thing,
yeah,
they just declare themselves bankrupt and then set up again in 6 months' time.
The whole Phoenix business, exactly. Do you think, Nick, that an ombudsman would help in this situation, and not so much for the resolution at the end, but also the deterrent at the beginning?
Yeah, I think the having some sort of overseer to make sure that the right things have been done at the start of the process and during the process and after the process. Yeah, well, an ombudsman could be a good outcome.
There's certainly plenty of people, Matilda Morozzi on text, that have been in that exact same situation as Michelle.
Yeah, Matt from Point Lonsdale has texted in supportive of the idea of an ombudsman. He said they recently had an experience with a secondhand car purchase, $5,000 worth of repairs needed immediately after they bought it. The warranty covered them, but he said it took a lot of pushing and calls with the dealership to actually get his consumer rights upheld. So it can be difficult when you've got that disagreement.
Bridget Rose is the Senior Policy Officer at the Consumer Action Law Centre. And the Consumer Action Law Centre, Bridget, is, I guess, who's pushing for an ombudsman here. How and why do you think this will help protect us as consumers?
Hi. So ombudsman schemes are really useful in Australia when we have service providers that we have complaints against, and to resolve disputes quickly and effectively. In Australia, ombudsman schemes have to meet certain benchmarks that are set by the government, which means they're fair, they're independent, they're transparent. And as part of that, they also have a systemic issues focus, which I think goes to some of that that you were discussing before about whether it would just solve the problem at the end, at the pointy end for each individual, which it would definitely assist with. It also, with that systemic issues view, would help to, create better conduct in the industry as a whole by publishing data, by working with the regulator, by publishing reports on the systemic issues that they see.
Bridget, as some people representing car dealers say, this would just be another level of bureaucracy. I wonder, could the current system be improved in a way that it solves these problems, or is there something fundamentally wrong with the current system that an ombudsman would solve?
I think the fact that this has been an issue for more than a decade, in fact about two decades, shows that the current system is just not working and we need a new, different solution.
So stay with us. We're going to have a quick chat to Penelope, who's called in Williamstown. Hi, Penelope.
Oh, hi. So I just wanted to talk about the experience of my son and his partner. They recently bought a secondhand car and they actually did get an independent assessment by a mechanic. I won't say who the company is. And as it's turned out, the car has turned out to be a lemon. So I'm not so sure that people are saying get an independent assessment. I'm not so sure that an independent assessment actually picks up everything with the car, because the car now has major problems.
And Penelope, lots of people are saying, well, just pay the small amount, have a mechanic check over the car. Yeah. It's the best insurance you can buy, says Dave, the mechanic as well. So do you feel like you've done all of the right things?
I believe that they did. They did that because it was a significant commitment, financial commitment for them. And so we did it, so from a risk perspective, they made the decision to get an assessment. And it just didn't pick up the problems with the car. And then it's been a bit of a problem chasing up stuff with the car dealer, because they ended up being in another state. But, anyhow, be that as it may, I would still say to people, buyer beware, because often that assessment may not pick up the deeper problems with the car.
Let's have a chat to Rebecca, who's in Malden. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi, Rochelle.
What did you want to say?
Yeah, look, I've bought a couple of second-hand vehicles for our family cars. I only go through used car salesmen, but I will always look at the service history book, look for the previous owner, and I will give them a call and ask them why they sold the car. And if I can't get that information, I'm not interested in the car.
Oh, I like your style.
Rebecca, how do people respond to that when they get a call from you saying, hey, I'm thinking of buying your vehicle from such and such dealer?
They're very open to conversation, and I think really people create quite strong relationships with their vehicles, and they're very happy to see their, if they've loved their car, they're very happy to see it go to a loving home.
Have they ever told you, though, if they've said, look, you know what, it was Dodge and I got rid of it because it kept breaking down on me?
Look, in actual fact, the two vehicles that I have bought, They did have the service history. I was able to talk to the previous owner, and they were low kilometres anyway. I think they'd done 40,000 kilometres when I purchased them. It was a wonderful experience. Both those vehicles have done over 240,000 kilometres, and I have had no problem with them.
I love it. Absolutely love it, Rebecca. I think that is such a great idea. Bridget Rose is back, Senior Policy Officer at the Consumer Action Law Centre. Is Rebecca from Malden onto something there as a part of our due diligence ringing the previous owner?
I think for people who are able to do that, that's great. But I think what we also need to remember is that we have the Australian consumer law here, and that protects us when we purchase any good or service, and that includes both new and used cars. And so that protects us so that when we buy a car, it needs to be of acceptable quality, it needs to be fit for purpose, it needs to be durable, it needs to be safe. And the issue, though, is that it's so difficult to access justice and enforce those rights under the consumer law in the current tribunal system.
Bridget, what are some of the issues I'm having if, say, I've bought a secondhand car, it's not working as I expect it to, the dealer's not coming to the table with a resolution I'm happy with. What's wrong with the current process that people go to? What do they have to do, and why do you think it's not working for consumers?
I might use an example to answer that one, and it's about a client who we've assisted who purchased a car in the start of the year. She's a single mum. She has three young children. She paid around $30,000 for her vehicle, and it literally broke within 2 hours. It broke on her way home. The engine light came on. It completely stopped working. She drove it all the way back. She lives in regional Victoria, so she drove it all the way back toward the Melbourne area, had it repaired, and then that worked for a couple of days, and the same thing happened. And so the problem is that she was in this endless repair cycle of 3 to 4 times. She attempted to reject the car by saying, this isn't good enough. You've sold me a car that broke down on the day I bought it. It broke down 2 days after you fixed it the first time. It broke down again after you fixed it the next time. And so she tried to reject the car, and then she received no response, and eventually received a response that the car dealer would start charging her storage for them keeping the car that she tried to return to them for a refund or replacement, which is a right under the consumer law. And the issue is now that she is still waiting for a response. And filing in VCAT takes a very long time. It's very expensive. You have to get the expert report really to have any sort of conclusion or outcome on those defects being there at the time of purchase. Those are difficult to get, and they're also an extra few thousand dollars on top of the money already spent on the vehicle. In her situation, not only did she lose $30,000, which she's still paying the loan for. She also lost her job because she wasn't able to her work shift.
Yeah.
She is paying for cabs to get to the supermarket. She was walking her children, you know, like an hour each way to childcare and school.
That's the reality of what happens. And a little later, we'll speak to West Justice about the impacts and the implications on families and individuals. But Bridget, I'm curious, we're seeing a rise of complaints around defective vehicles. So why is that? I mean, and how responsible and how much do some of these dealers know about the defective vehicles? Or is it just when you're selling a second-hand car, you're getting rid of it because fundamentally maybe it's not up to scratch and something's not right with it? Or are dealers not doing their job properly, and are they knowingly selling us lemons? Like, how much of a growing problem is this, and how much of these dodgy cars is built into business models of some of these places? Or is it not quite as sinister as that?
I think for some dealers it is that sinister, unfortunately, and the system really incentivizes that because those dealers know it's so difficult to go to VCAT that they know that people will usually give up and just wear the cost themselves and try and deal with, you know, the stress and the massive financial debt that brings. I think the problem has actually been really high complaints for a really long time, but the focus is a little bit clearer now that used cars are averaging at $41,000 currently. So they're not cheap. And, you know, there's been the lack of newer cars. So many people have been buying used cars as well. So I think those things have just sort of provided clarity to this problem that has actually been going on for years and years and years.
And Bridget, I'm just wondering, the idea of an ombudsman, could you briefly tell us how that would fix these current issues? How would that solve that problem?
So the reason why we are, you know, advocating for the government to commit to an ombudsman scheme is that an ombudsman scheme is fair. It's usually run by both a board, a separate board of industry and consumer representatives. And it's a free service where a consumer can go to bring their complaint. We would see the expert report being provided as part of the ombudsman service. And then it usually includes conciliation, and where that doesn't result in a resolution, it can go to a binding determination.
Much
faster.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us and talking us through an ombudsman. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks so much.
That's Bridget Rose, Senior Policy Officer at the Consumer Action Law Centre.
Let's have a chat with Dave. He's in Harrietville. Hi, Dave.
Good morning. Yes, I was looking for a good four-wheel drive, no names mentioned. And I went to an auction house because sometimes you can pick up a good deal there. But I also learned that you can get a really bad problem as well. And I was looking at a particular car that was up my alley. It had the business phone number on it of the previous owner. So I rang them and I had a chat to them about it. And they were very surprised that it was in the auction house because since new, it had major engine problems. They returned it to the manufacturer who said they repaired it. They got the car back. The same problems occurred again. They, after numerous times, finally convinced the manufacturer to take the car back and give them the credit towards a new car. So the manufacturer took the car back and then dumped it on the auction floor.
Yeah.
And after doing research, I found out that once it's on the auction floor, there's no liability. So instead of that manufacturer fixing the car and making it good, they tried to get rid of it, and it sold for full retail price at the auction. And the previous owner said that I was the only person that rang him and asked him about the car.
Dave, you've raised such a good point. And Matilda, I guess this is what I was trying to get to with the Consumer Action Law Centre as well, is how much do, you know, auction houses, do car dealers, do they willingly know that the car that they have is a lemon? And how is it that they can potentially have that information and still legally be able to sell it without disclosing any of that? So we're talking about an ombudsman at the pointy end once it's all gone pear-shaped, but it does feel like a heap of work needs to happen at the front end to ensure that those cars in that state, even though they have that information, isn't sold, which then gets to the question of, they're not interested in the car that they're selling you. They're interested in the loan that they're giving you.
I think it'd be really hard to tell, you know, what the motivation or what dealers might know about it. But I think something you can say is that there are some dealers who are repeatedly selling cars that people are having trouble with and people having trouble resolving them. And secondhand car dealers are licensed. So a body like Consumer Affairs Victoria could revoke their license. But I don't think that happens very often that you have that, because that's quite a big punishment to not be able to trade anymore. But it is something that, you know, Consumer Affairs Victoria or fair trading bodies in other states could do to kind of pull people into line.
Warwick's in Berwick. Hi, Warwick.
Good morning. How are we, ladies?
Very well. What did you want to add?
Well, I came into the discussion a bit later. I don't know what was covered early, but one thing, I used to be involved in the trade, and I hate the idea of the cowboys that give it a bad name. But there's a simple way, if people are buying a vehicle, if they happen to be RACV members, you can pay for an on-site inspection from the RACV. They'll send a patrol person, you know, a qualified mechanic out, who doesn't just look at the car from a roadworthy point of view, but looks at, you know, how the engine's sounding, running, etc., what the transmission's doing, all of that sort of thing, and they'll give you a written report at the end of it. It's not super expensive. From memory, when I was involved in the trade, it was about $100 or $120 for a written report on the vehicle that was independent of the dealer.
There's lots of people making that.
To have a bit of insurance.
Yeah, lots of people making that same suggestion. Yeah, Warwick, there's a text here that says, you know, short of pulling the entire car apart and rebuilding it, no inspection service will be able to give you that information. I mean, do you think that just by looking at it and going through all the checks and balances that you just mentioned there, that that's enough?
Well, the checks that were done by the on-site inspectors included doing enough work on the engine, like giving it compressor tests and things of that nature, that they've got a pretty good idea of what the engine's like. The transmission, you know, if it changes smoothly and it's all okay, they probably can't do much more than that. But at least it gives you a bit of peace of mind, and the RACV are fairly thorough with what they look at and what they give you back as a written report. Mm. If you find a dealer who doesn't want to let you, or a private sale for that matter, who doesn't want to let you have an RACV report before you buy,
it's a red flag indicator
to take a walk.
So, Warwick, can I ask, so you were in car sales, you were a former car retailer, is that right?
Yes, I was involved with commercial vehicles.
So, did you ever sell secondhand cars?
Yep.
Were there ever times where there were cars on the floor where you all knew that maybe that car had some issues, but nothing was done about it?
Well, I can honestly say, from the point of view of the place I was involved with, no, not knowingly. But then again, if you take it to the nth degree, it's all a bunch of buckets of nuts and bolts, and things break. So you can never be 100% certain that it's going to be okay, but we took the trouble to make sure we gave them as thorough a test prior to putting them on the lock as we could. And then, you know, we never balked the idea of having RACV tests or anything done on the vehicles before they were taken from the lot.
That's good to hear, Warwick. Thank you so much for your call. We got a text message along a similar line to that, Rochelle, saying, as an ex-car dealer of over 20 years, the last thing I would want is to have to deal with a warranty claim. So I use my expertise to buy quality cars to resell. But even then, there are occasionally small issues that arise. So, yeah, in his interest, not to have to deal with the hassle of having someone come back and said the car's not working.
Absolutely. Well, what do you think? Would an ombudsman help?
I only go through used car salesmen, but I will always look at the service history book, look for the previous owner, and I will give them a call.
This is the Conversation Hour.
Rochelle Hunt and Matilda Morozzi with you, talking about used cars and the number of complaints on dodgy used cars that are being sold to us and what we can do about it. Would an ombudsman help? And Matilda, this is something that you've been looking into, and of course people can jump onto the ABC News website to look at more detail of the article that you've written about this and some of the case studies and people that you've spent time with. But judging by the list of texts and calls that we've got, it's certainly a growing issue.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the people we spoke to for this story about whether an ombudsman would be good or not is James Vortman. He's the Chief Executive Officer at the Australian Automotive Dealer Association. Thanks for joining us this morning, James.
Thanks for having me.
What do you think about this idea of establishing an ombudsman?
Look, you know, I prefer to look at existing structures within the current system, you know, consumer affairs, fair trading agencies. I think they are the best place authority to sort of attempt to resolve these disputes. They have the power to license dealers and to revoke those licenses. They have the expertise of inspectors in those departments who have dealt with these types of disputes for many years, and often have the technical expertise that you would require of a sort of automotive dispute. So I would prefer that we look at those systems, and when it comes to VCAT, that we had actually addressed the issue of resourcing rather than establishing a new sort of bureaucratic structure, which we don't necessarily know whether it would be better equipped to deal with these disputes.
James, we heard from Michelle Moon at the top of the program, who had a problem with her son's ute. And she said when she went to Consumer Affairs Victoria, she didn't really get much help from them. So it seems like the system, you know, I've heard other stories like that as well. It seems like something's going wrong there, that the help isn't being provided. Do you have any insight into why that might be at the moment?
No, look, I don't have insight, and we represent a national association, and, you know, we sort of see, you know, a number of examples. But, you know, there are jurisdictions in Australia where Consumer Affairs does try and play that sort of role in attempting to resolve a dispute. They can often only do that much, so much, and often they cannot sort of stop a dispute from going through to the civil and administrative tribunal. But, you know, these are often very complex cases. They're emotive because they involve a large purchase, and a vehicle is so important to people's sort of daily needs, whether it's getting to work, you know, getting the kids to school or so forth. So, you know, it is a difficult situation. But, you know, the question is whether we establish a new ombudsman is the way to go, and we're just not convinced that it is.
James, are you concerned, and is your industry concerned, about the rising number of lemon cars that are being sold and what little is being done about it? I mean, you've spoken about licences being revoked, but we sort of know that that doesn't happen very often. And we know that going through VCAT is stressful and a long and an expensive process, and very few people want to do that. It sort of feels as though maybe some dealers that are giving your industry a bad name are getting away with this because they know that the process is just so long and complicated that it's just worth the risk for them, and the fines are so minimal that when you do the numbers, it's worth the risk.
Well, look, let me just start by saying we don't want, as one of your previous callers said, the cowboys in our industry. And again, you know, if we see repeat offenders in our industry who constantly deny consumers their statutory rights, we believe action should be taken. And we need to look at the licenses that those providers have, and we need to put them on notice and de-license those businesses if we need to. But on the earlier comment you made around the growing number of lemons and so forth, I really do think we need an independent process which actually asks the question, are we seeing a growing number of lemons? Yes, there are a lot of complaints, but remember, used cars are sold through dealers, through auction houses, which one of your previous callers mentioned, and then the majority of used cars are sold in the private-to-private market. So we need to contextualise these complaints and understand which channel is sort of the one that's being complained about the most, and how many of these complaints are in fact genuine. Because, as you know, with a motor vehicle, it can be disputed as to where the defect originated from. So it is a very complicated issue. There are no quick fixes, but, you know, there are some things consumers can do to protect themselves. And we in fact say that buying from a licensed dealer is one of those things.
James, I wonder, you think about the case of, you know, the single mum we heard about earlier who's needing a loan to take out, to buy the car, and it breaks down in regional Victoria, needs a car to get to work, needs a car to get the kids to school. These kind of people don't have 2 years to wait for VCAT to deal with the complaint, and they don't have the money to hire lawyers and get independent mechanical advice to say whether, you know, it was their fault the car broke down or the car was sold to them in an inappropriate condition. What do you think would happen to people like that? Because I guess the benefit of an ombudsman, that would be free for consumers like that to get a resolution, whereas at the moment it can be a long process and really expensive. What do you think people like that single mum should do now?
Yeah, well, look, and again, I'll use the example, you know, when I spoke to some of my members in New South Wales, and I'll just reflect on that specific example because there's so many specific examples. That seems to be a clear breach of that consumer statutory warranty rights. I think you said it, the problem emerged within a day or two of the vehicle being purchased.
Yeah.
So, you know, in Victoria, if your car's less than 10 years old and has done less than 160,000 kilometres, you have a three-month statutory warranty. So if the dealer within 2 days is repairing it once or twice and it's still not fixing the vehicle, that's a clear breach of statutory warranty. I think in those very clear situations, there's no reason why we can't try and have consumer affairs or fair trading playing a constructive role, talking to the consumer, encouraging the dealer to do the right thing. And I think that effect of that sort of authority with the licensing power involved will encourage those dealers, and I think it's only a minority of dealers who aren't doing the right thing, to look at their practices and improve and do better.
James, thanks for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
CEO James Fortman, the Chief Executive Officer at the Australian Automotive Dealer Association. This text, Rochelle and Matilda, I had a mate who used to work for a large dealer. When they ran short of good used cars, they went to the auctions and they purchased some. One family car they purchased had a small electrical fault. But when my friend, who was a mechanic at the dealer, opened up the dashboard to repair it, he found a layer of river silt in all of the components. It had obviously been in a flood. He told me the sales management what he'd found. It was sent back to the auctions to be resold. Just a warning, with the weather like we've had recently, that's from Aaron in Bairnsdale. And Vanessa, that's something that you wanted to bring up.
Yeah, I was just thinking, like, there's thousands of cars that may have been through the flood, may still run, but have perhaps been compromised, had water in the interior or through the wiring area. Where are these cars going to go?
Yeah.
They're not all going to be scrapped or checked over. And as the person said before, a lot of cars are sold privately. So I'd say buyer beware, because there's been a shortage of utes and cars. People may be desperately looking for a car, and you could be buying something from private or auction or secondhand dealer that's been through a flood.
Yeah, really good point. It's something we have to keep our eye on. Before we have a chat to Wes Justice, who I know, Matilda, you spent some time with as well, and we spent a lot of time with on this program, who do incredible work to help people, again, when they get to that really awful pointy end of, okay, now I don't have a car, but I've got a huge debt that I need to pay off. And then, as we heard before, like, if you're having to catch taxis and all sorts of things on top of it, you get into a debt spiral. So it's not just about the dodgy car that you've purchased, it's about the ongoing impacts that it's going to have as well.
Yeah, absolutely. But we'll check in with Mike Sinclair. He's the editor of Car Sales. Thanks for joining us, Mike.
G'day, guys.
Mike, I wonder what you think about the idea of an ombudsman. Is it something that you think there's a place for in Victoria?
I think there are a number of protections for consumers already existing, and I just wonder whether an ombudsman is going to actually fix anything or make any of those processes quicker. As James pointed out, these are often very complex issues, and emotive issues, and often they stem from the fact that people have seen something that's probably a little bit too good to be true, and they've gone and purchased it and it has been too good to be true. And I know that sounds like a fairly harsh way to approach it, but if you buy a car from a established, well-known, main dealer, you probably pay a little bit more, but in the long run, you're probably going to get a better product.
Mike, I'm not sure if you know, but I wonder, we talked a little bit about how a lot of cars now are just bought from private individual to private individual on social media or websites like Car Sales. Do you know if Australian consumer law applies if you buy a car off another private citizen? Do you still have those protections in place that you would if you're getting it from a licensed secondhand dealer?
No, you don't have the same protections, but there are methods by which you can actually make sure that the car you're buying is A, what it purports to be, and B, in the condition you should be buying it. So there's a number of pre-purchase inspection services that will offer a form of guarantee that give you some comfort. And also there's the basic processes of the PPSR register and those sorts of things that people should go through when they're buying a car privately.
And just finally, Mike, I mean, we were saying that we've seen the number of complaints rise, but I wonder if that's just because we've seen the number of second-hand car sales rise because of a multitude of reasons, thanks to the pandemic. I mean, is this the most you've ever seen second-hand car sales jump in a short period in your time in the industry? Is it at a peak?
Not so much in the volume, Rochelle, but it's certainly in terms of price. People are paying a lot more money than they were for the same second-hand car maybe, pre-pandemic. There's certainly strong volume, but it's still relatively stock-constrained. I think what happened, and very much so during the pandemic, is there was a greater demand for cars from people maybe who didn't necessarily have a car in the past, or maybe they were adding a car to their family as they moved away from public transport. So that's exacerbated issues. We're not, I don't have any data that suggests that that increase in complaints is commensurate with the change in volume of sales. I think what we're seeing, though, is methods via which people can get a bit louder with those complaints, so they perhaps become a bit more obvious.
Yeah, that's a good point. Thank you so much for joining us, Mike.
Cheers, guys.
That's Mike Sinclair. He's the editor of Car Sales. And we've got a text in here on 0437 774 774. Hi, Richelle and Matilda. Now that it's been brought up, I'm amazed that there isn't already an ombudsman in this space. Definitely needed.
Well, someone that agrees with that is Joe Nunwick. He's the director of economic justice team at West Justice. And Joe, people turn to you and your incredible team there at West Justice when they need help, when things have gone absolutely pear-shaped. And are you seeing a rise in people that have purchased a car, have taken out a loan for that car, the car breaks down, they no longer have that car, but they still have the loan and all the associated costs that run alongside that? Is that something that you're seeing at West Justice?
We are seeing that, unfortunately, Rochelle. And it sort of to paint a little bit of a life cycle of what this looks like for our clients, you have to remember that they're living in outer suburban areas where if the car stops, you don't just go and get the train or the tram instead. So they're often getting a credit contract on the side. And apart from a few cases, you tend to be stuck desperately negotiating with that lender the money you can't pay while you're facing all the costs with this broken down car that's not going anywhere. Other factors on top of that, you may not be able to get to work or necessarily health or childcare. If you have nowhere to park that car off street, you might continue paying rego for a car that doesn't drive. And we've unfortunately even seen people who have the car laid up, so waiting and waiting for that day at VCAT or to resolve the matter, and their real estate agent or their landlord starts heavying them about this car that they can't move that's causing a problem. So these are some things that mount up.
Joe, that sounds like it's having a devastating impact on your clients. What are they able to do if they're stuck in that situation? How can you guys help them?
Well, we can certainly help, first of all, by advocating and try to assist them in the car dispute. Some of the same systemic barriers that have been really well laid out this hour apply. So, for example, it's really painful when someone's in that hardship with a broken down van they wanted to use for work with a credit contract. And you have to break the bad news to them that getting an expert report for their van and identifying the problem, sort of breaking it all down, is going to cost them at least $8,500, and they have to give up at that point. What we can do in those situations otherwise is that if there's other hardships, look, we can take that apart. We can work with them. If they've gotten a credit contract but they're having trouble getting any traction with the car, we can look into whether the lending was appropriate. We can look into whether hardship considerations have been applied. And of course, we can look into the other circumstances surrounding how they ended up on the loan for that contract.
Is or do you think that an ombudsman will help here, or by the time an ombudsman comes in, have they already gone through all of that pain, Joe, that you've just described?
No, they come to us for the first time after what I would say is tends to be sort of more disreputable conduct by the car trader industry. So they may have dealt with ones that have flat out refused a calling off period, a statutory warranty or a consumer guarantee, and they haven't had traction negotiating directly, and they haven't had traction with Consumer Affairs Victoria. That would be the perfect time to put it on a quick prompt ombudsman track. People who weren't complying with the basics in the sector would probably change their behaviour or leave the sector if they weren't willing to, if they realised that there was an ombudsman model that was putting financial pressure on them to comply straight away. Properly resourced, that can also identify claims which lack merit or are best to go to a mediated settlement sooner rather than later.
Joe, thanks for your time and for the work that you and your team do.
Thank you so much, Rochelle.
CEO Joe Nunwick, they're the Director of Economic Justice Team, part of the team at West Justice. And that, I guess, Matilda, just highlighted the ongoing, you know, the ongoing implications and the huge ramifications. We're talking about people losing their jobs, losing their homes, all sorts of things as a result. So it's such a domino effect, isn't it?
And then if you're in debt for a car that, and then you lose your job because the car's not working, then you can't pay down that debt. You can just see how that spiral kind of starts taking place. We got a call from John in Smythesdale. John, what was your experience?
I bought a people mover some time ago. I don't have it anymore. But it came with two air conditioning units, one for the front, one for the back. So after having it for about 7 days, one of the air conditioning units broke. So I took it back to the car dealership. They fixed it and I got it back. What I didn't know is after about 4 weeks, that unit also broke. And when I went to get it repaired, I rang up the car dealer and they said, oh, no, just get it repaired in your, because I actually bought the car in Melbourne, so just get it repaired in your nearest suburb. And when I went to get it repaired, I said, look, it's under warranty. And they rang up the warranty company and said, oh, no, this has already been claimed on. So not only was it a second-hand unit that they replaced it with, but the car dealership had claimed on the warranty of my warranty, and they wouldn't replace it. It was like over $1,000.
Oh, John, your story, unfortunately, it's not alone. So I'm sorry to hear that. And just finally, this text, Matilda, from Jenny, it says, we need a Judge Judy type system here, right, where both parties turn up to a location with the car, supporting information. They meet an experienced mechanic and a lawyer. Quick and easy, time critical, and evidence right there. So where is Judge Judy when you need her?
I think that's kind of what VCAT's meant to be, but probably less entertaining. So
I would find myself watching Judge Judy and questioning my life choices so many times. You can go online to ABC News. You can follow Matilda on Twitter, Matilda Marozzi, to look at this story in more detail as well. That's it for today. Thanks for listening. Take care and we'll speak to you soon.